You are listening to a podcast from Riverview Church in Bowness, recorded during one of our Sunday gatherings. For more information about Riverview Church, for service times or contact details, go to riverviewchurch.uk or find us on Facebook at Riverview Bowness.
Good morning, everyone. It's lovely to be here this morning. I've heard so much about Riverview Church, and to be here in presence is absolutely wonderful. I'm excited. Are you all excited this morning? Oh my, it's difficult. You get some audiences you have to pull teeth with. Folks, you may not know who I am. My name is David Curry. I represent Connect 2 Teen Challenge in Forth Valley. We started up in 2019. And the work we are involved in is part and parcel of a worldwide work. And we just want to share a little bit about that this morning, but we're going to hear more about how the work they're involved in, that frontline work, how it changes lives. And we're going to hear two testimonies this morning of what God has been doing in two individuals' lives. But we're Margaret, this is something I just need to get this out of the way, because my school days wasn't all that good. And the head teacher had me in the room for all sorts of reasons. Not good, I can tell you. But I want to contradict the head teacher today. So some of us are here from Found Church. Some are here from the Baptist Church. Ooh. They get out once in a while. And then there are some here who are out for their break away from the rehabs. We've got Nicola here from Hope House. Stand up, Nicola. Give Nicola a round of applause. Embarrass her. And we have Paul. So Paul's up from Nottingham, from Willoughby House. So lovely to have you guys here this morning. And we're excited about what God has been doing in their lives also. So, addiction, is there a way out? Sadly to say, there's 270 million people who are affected by addiction. I'll say that again. 270 million people are affected worldwide by addiction. Sadly to say that 3.6 million die every year. And while we sit here today, seven people die every minute. I don't know about you, but that shocks me. The reality of what's happening in our world is that people are dying through substances. And the reality of that is that it's not right. And it used to be I thought in my life I had nothing to share with people because I've not had an addiction background. I've got nothing to share. But yet I had a bright light moment, the hope that was within me, the Jesus who died for me died also for everyone. And therefore, at an older age, I came to that realization I had the answer. We have the answer in addiction. So where does this all come from? Teen Challenge itself, some of you all know the book that David Wilson wrote way back in the early 60s called The Cross and the Switchblade. The book tells of how a pastor, how he went into some really rough areas of New York and helped men and women who were in gangs. But of course, he found that they were on substances. He found that they were on drugs and drink, and they were trying to help them into churches, but they couldn't sustain it. They were going back to their old places of living where the dealers were. The reality then was they started rehabilitation centres. And we are thanking God today, you'll see in the map, that they're now in 129 countries with over 23,000 people in rehab beds every single day across the world. The rehabs themselves, we get involved in different rehabs and helping folks get away from the local areas. Some of you may have heard of the different ones. There's Benaya, which up north there, you've got Sunny Braes, you've got Duns, and you've got the Haven, Kilmacombe. So these are various places where it takes men and women away for a long period of time to help them to get their lives back physically. But you know, more importantly than their physical health is their spiritual health. These are Christian rehabs where folks go there, and the Bible talks about renewing your mind. And that's where they go to be able to find that part that was always belonging to God, the piece of the jigsaw that was and is missing. Here in Forth Valley, we're involved in taking coffee bar bus out into the streets. We're involved in with getting folks away to rehab. We're involved in prison work. We're involved in doing a drop-in in Denny. And we're involved also in schools now. Just in the last year, we've managed to get into Braes High School and to be able to help young men who are vulnerable in their situation and the situation within there. We're believing that we're also going to be able to do Drug Proof Your Kids course, that's Care for the Family, to help parents to know how better to help their children. Last 2022, we had over 1,000 people on our buses, but 2023, we had over 1,200 people coming. Not 1,200 individuals, but 1,200 repeat visits coming to our evening work where we take a coffee bar bus onto the streets of Forth Valley. And that tells you there's a need. And if we, the church, have got the answer, guess what? We need to be able to hand that over to the folks who are broken and who are homeless, who are starving, who are in need. We are thankful and connect to that we have a group of people who God has raised up since 2019 to help us lead the charity. We've got trustees, we've got leaders, and we've got a team of people who help us within the charity. And so we're grateful that God has blessed us in so many ways. But of course, like you and like everybody else, we had the 2 years pandemic where the whole thing had to close. We started in 2019, pandemic was March 2020. Oh, what are we going to do? And so we started doing monthly testimony meetings, giving their own stories over, and it's on Zoom. And it's the first Sunday of every month, we 8:15, and we do two testimonies every month. And we started it in the first year of lockdown and continued month after month since, and we still continue to do that. If you're interested, there's a sheet at the back for you to sign up, and we'll text you the details. You don't have to turn up. You turn up as and when you're available. And so my initial question says, addiction, is there a way out? The answer, friend, this morning is yes, there is a way out, but only through Jesus. The world hasn't got the answer. The church is God's answer to the world. And so this morning I want to hand over just now to a young man who we've got to know very well. His name's Mark Tuddingham, and Mark's going to come and share his story about what God has done in his life. And then followed by Mark, we've got Tommy Rogers. Tommy is under control at the moment because his wife's sitting next to him, so he'll need to behave himself today. And so we'll get Tommy Rogers after that, and then I'll come and just share a little thought at the end if time permits. So put your hands together for Mark. Thank you.
Hiya, so I'll start at the beginning. So I grew up just over the water in Clamaran, and for me growing up was good. I don't got any of these horror stories or anything like that. I just grew up in a single parent family, just my mum and my brother, and life was good, got all the love in the world and all that kind of stuff. But it started at a very early age for me. It was normal, just you and your friends would test the boundaries, start off with smoking and all that kind of stuff, and then slowly moving on just to daft things. Started messing about solvent abuse and that at a very young age. Then going into high school and stuff, it was me, I started smoking weed and drinking and all that kind of stuff. And you don't think that's wrong. To me, that was normal, that was the world, that was kind of what you'd done. And being in a single parent family, I got away with murder. My mum just, I think she tried to compensate, so she let us away with a lot, and that just continued. And in my later teens and stuff like that, I had always getting jobs and stuff like that, quite decent work and stuff, but if I didn't like it, I would just pack it in. I never had to answer consequences or that for anything that I'd done. It was up to me, kind of thing. And that, didn't set me in good stead, obviously. So moving into my early 20s and stuff, I was drinking a lot, taking a lot of party drugs and a lot of ecstasy, a lot of cocaine and stuff like that, and I kind of started blurring the lines between reality and what was normal and stuff, and it was, again, just messing up loads and loads and loads of jobs. So I started taking a lot of Valium and stuff like that to just kind of cope with the come downs and stuff, and I suppose that was the start of where things really started to kind of go quite wrong, and I quite quickly ended up with a dependency on Valium. It was I was still going out at weekends and stuff like that, but then more and more I started liking that numb feeling like quite subdued. You didn't really care about anything, and I quite enjoyed that. And I went into my late 20s, it was at this point I was introduced to heroin. I started smoking heroin, and it was like, it was a kind of drug I liked. I kind of got to that point in my life where I'm like, I can't be bothered with that partying and all that kind of stuff. It was, just chill out. And I thought it was all right because I was doing it in the house, it was acceptable and stuff like that. But so like I said, I thought I was controlling it. I was in and out of jobs. I thought I was hiding it well and all that, but I don't think I was anyway. And so I met this girl, and she ended up pregnant. And she was aware of my Valium use and all that, but the heroin and stuff, I wouldn't say it was an issue too bad yet. And so she never really realised. And my daughter was born, first daughter, and you would think like that was kind of enough for me to get my act together, but it wasn't. It was more an excuse to hide it more, keep it a lot more secret, and it started to even spiral out of control at this point. And I was having to take handful of Valium and stuff like that in the morning, even just to get what it took to kind of go outside, and even to stand in a shop or that, it became that bad. My heart would be racing and panic attacks, and so when I got home at night for work or whatever I was doing, it was right into smoking a bag of heroin or whatever it was, and it was chaos. And then, but I think, to be fair, like she was younger as well, and it was like, I don't think she wanted to be a single mum, so she kind of knew what I was doing, but she just put up with it. I truly believe that. And it was like, and then she ended up pregnant again, and while she was pregnant, my mum told me that she was ill and she had cancer, and I was like, oh, well. And it's obviously, like, growing up with just my mum was my world, she was my hero, so it was like everything in there. So, but within 3 months of my mum telling me this, like, she was dead, and I reckon that at that point, I've shared this before, I made a decision. I can honestly say that day I made a decision, even with a family, with daughters and stuff like that, to be pretty selfish and just to, I was just going to do stuff on my own. It was like, I just didn't care. And I started injecting heroin, and that just took me to depths that you could never imagine. It was horrific, holes on my body. I would lie constantly. I wasn't a nice person. It was, I was just isolating in the flat. I would do whatever I could to get whatever I needed, and I'd just accepted it would be all right. And it was like that, and that was just the way it would be, and the rest of my life it was fine. And I was saying, I used to live in just complete and utter darkness, like just a pure shadow, a man in one room in a flat, like terrified when the door went, like absolute fear constantly, anxiety, like just... It's a full-time job living that lifestyle. It's horrific. It really is. And then, obviously, I didn't feed myself or nothing like that, so I was very thin. And then one night I walked onto I was told about a Connect 18 Challenge bus, and I walked onto that bus one night, and the nice people looked after me and stuff, fed me and stuff. And then the next again week there was a need to go back, and then I just kept going back, and obviously they told me that I didn't have to live the way I was living, like that kind of stuff. And you don't believe that when you're living that lifestyle. And but at this point, I had my daughters and that were completely out of my life, you know what I mean? And they should have been, to be fair. Like, I wasn't capable of being round about them or that. So this time I had just, family-wise and stuff like that, it was gone. And they said that didn't have to be this, and worked with me, and I wasn't the easiest to work with, you know what I mean? I was like, just no engaging, like having to come and find me and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't do a lot of the work on my own, like a lot of the work was done for me. And then got me away, got me an interview, and then got me away to the Haven, and then So I went to the Haven, Kilmacombe, on the 11th of October last year, and I was just, it was a horrible time for me. But then I've always wondered how I describe the Haven, and then I was in a chapel in the Haven, Northern London, and this verse read to me, and it's never really clicked with me, but see, since that night, I've not really been able to forget it since that morning. It says, the people living in darkness, this is Matthew 4, verse 16, have seen a great light on those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light that has dawned. And that's what he was preaching on. He was preaching on darkness, and I can only say that's the only thing to describe it. I think David said the other week when we were talking to somebody, it shouldn't work in these places. You know what I mean? People come for, like, abuse, violence. It's like, it shouldn't work, but it does. And so I caught that, and it was just, so I'd done a 2-week detox, which was difficult. And after that, you're getting all your emotions and all start to come back. And that was the toughest thing for me. But I had an experience one night, and I'm not going too much into it, but I had an experience one night, and I can honestly say that moment something happened to me, and the desire to use drugs left me, and I knew I would never, ever take drugs again in my life. So I knew it was just to get my head down, get on with the program. So I finished the program. I was baptised in between this, on the 12th of February last year, which was amazing. And I just cracked on with the program. Finished the program. I started coming back. I started helping with Connect 2 with Tommy and David twice a week. Work with them, which is an absolute privilege. On the bus and stuff in Stirling, which is amazing. But then in between all that, it's my daughters came back into my life. So now I have an amazing relationship with my daughter. In October, they just came back, but you wouldn't even think I'd been away. It's mad. And it's no, obviously, I don't feel it's no doubt to me at all. Like Psalm 16 and 8 says, like, something like, you set the Lord before you, and at your right hand you will not be shaken. It's something along the lines. And every day I truly, truly, truly try to do that. I really do. And obviously I'm not always getting it right. Stress is not coming back in. Like, life's real. Like, it is. It's so real. Like, it's tough. Like, this season over Christmas, and that's been really difficult. But, it's amazing. I've gotten back in my life. Like I say, I come back twice a week. I stay with an amazing Christian family who have opened their home to me, David and Gladys, and it's just, it's just a totally different life altogether. I get to see my daughters weekly, every second weekend, just pass my theory test, going for my driving test. No, I mean, you can imagine this kind of stuff. It's amazing. So, And just going forward, I mean, like, honestly, this organisation, Connect 2, the people that it helps is frightening. Alone, the guys, my friends, who went through, came off through the Alloa bus and that as well when they're away, just to see what's been happening, see the guys coming back, and Scott up in Sunny Bray in the last month or so, it's something else. They're moving, and it's God moving, that moves through them, and saved my life. I wouldn't be standing here today if it wasn't for God and the people that I put in my path, and just phenomenal. So I thank you for listening.
So my name's Tommy Rogers, and every time I see that picture up there, it's horrible. I look like the donkey for Shrek. No, it's like, I've always said that, and it's just the only good thing is the fact is I've got a fringe there. So always try to take the positives out of situations. But no, like Mark, myself, I come from a chaotic lifestyle. My upbringing was different from Mark's. You know, I come from a wee town called Orion, Ayrshire, North Ayrshire, and both my parents were alcoholics, and it was just a normal thing for me. It was a daily thing, actually, to see my dad battering my mother, and you know, that was just my reality. I was quite a big family. There was six boys all in my mum and dad had, and you know, I was quite a was quite a deep thinker as a young fella, which kind of manifested itself. It warped me a bit. I ended up growing up quite an angry, confused young man due to when boys my age were watching Disney movies and playing computers, I was thinking, why is this going on in my home? Why is my dad hitting my mum? Why are they always promising to take me swimming and then end up drinking instead and things like that? So all this was going on in my mind as a young fellow. And every young man looks for some sort of kind of role model in their life, whether it be in movies and things like that. And looking at my dad, I knew he wasn't something in me as a young fella knew that wasn't right. He would sit in the chair and just drink himself into states to the point where he would urinate himself and things like that. It was horrible. And he was always, the stuff that would come out of his mouth was poisonous. And so I started looking for a role model in the form of my older brother, Graham, who was a drug dealer. So to put it into perspective, you know, when I was a young fella, when I was at early years of primary school, the police would kick my door in, a family home door in, very regularly, at least every couple of months, to search a house for drugs. And it got that frequent where the police women would come in first and say to my mum, right, Helen, get Tommy and Joe, me and my wee brother, who were the youngest, get them ready for school and get them out here before we turn the house upside down and bring the dogs in. And my brother got wise to that, and he used to stuff our school bags full of drugs and money and zip them up, and then I'm going away to school, my wee Sonic the Hedgehog school bag, knowing what's in my bag wasn't right, and knowing it could land my brothers and my family in trouble. Because to me, the police were these bad guys who smashed my door in, and, you know, I was frightened me as a young man. Smashed my door in and upset my mother. That was my view of it. I didn't see the fact that what my brother was doing was wrong, or what these things in my school bag were damaging people. So that was my outlook on life. So, you know, going through my teenage years, I was a nightmare. You know, I was school, I used to torture the life out of teachers, you know, and used to torment borderline bully teachers. It was just, I was a wee angry man, and always just, I could never develop a trust relationship with authoritarian figures in my life, in the form of teachers and police and whatnot. So that manifested itself in a life of absolute chaos. I was experimenting with drugs from a very, very young age, smoking cannabis at the back end of primary school, dealing ecstasy tablets to my friends in first year, second year. And just, I was always the first to try anything. I tried every drug there is under the sun. It's just these new drugs that are out there now that I've not tried. And I'll never will, just to put that in. Just realise my wife's growling at me there. So it got quite chaotic. It got to the point where drugs get a hold of me. I was taking Valium. Valium was my drug of choice. I was funding my drug addiction in the form of, I stole a caravan one time. I get in with a family of travellers, and they says, if you steal that caravan, I'll give you £3,000 for it. And I thought, all right, no problem. Stole the caravan. I thought, this is a great way of making money. So that was my career for a wee while. I used to jump about stealing caravans. I hope no one in here's ever had a caravan stolen, because I have flirted up this way years ago. But no, that was my means, and that was how I got involved with crime. And, you know, my life was just like that for years. But there was a thing that happened to me, just to explain why I was like that. And it was when I was a young boy, I remember asking my mum and dad were very, when I say protective, I can see it for what it is now. They would never let me stay at any of my friends' houses, but I understand why now. Because obviously, in case I spoke or whatever was going on in my household, but I stayed at my friend's house one night, and it was a Friday night, and we were watching Top of the Pops, and the chip bus was going round by, and I remember his family, my friend Colin, his mum went out and got all the fish suppers or whatever it was, and we all sat there, and I experienced something that I'd never experienced before in my life, and it was like how a normal family home setting was. Because there's his sister, his mum, his dad, myself, sitting there laughing and joking, having a meal together, and I'd never experienced that in my life. And, you know, that was unfortunately detrimental for me. It saddened me, you know. I realised that night, like, what's going on in my house, isn't it right? You know, that's no right, all the beatings and all the carry-on and all that stuff and all the shouting and swearing. And so that just sent me on the dark path. I went down. I very quickly, you know, was involved in drugs for a very young age, like I said, but Valium was my drug of choice. But and I don't know if you know much about Valium, but when you swallow a handful of Valium tablets and drink a bottle of wine, you're waking up 2 or 3 days later and you don't know what you've done. So things happened very quickly, but I ended up flirting with heroin. I smoked heroin. I could never inject heroin. I'd never ever tried. I've been scared for needles. COVID was a nightmare for me, having to get injections and all that. I nearly fainted half the time. So I was smoking heroin for some time, and I was very depressed. I was very, very... There was a dark cloud hanging over my life, and my older brother died of a heroin overdose, and that shook the whole family, split the family up. And then my mother died very quickly after that, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, what was it, 2 months after my brother had died, my mum died, and it was alcohol that finally killed my mother. Her kidneys gave in. She ended up developing diabetes, and the vodka was just smashing her kidneys. And when she died, I never even grieved her. I just thought, well, great, I'll go to doctors and I'll let them know that my mum's died. He'll fling tablets at me, this will be great. That was my thinking, because my heart was all twisted and corrupt. And so I spent years after that just jumping from house to house, just swallowing tablets, whatever. And then my dad died. And when my dad died, I remember just thinking, because although my dad was what he was, there was moments of clarity in his life where the odd time he would go fishing or whatever, and he did for the best part of putting it, kind of get his act together. At the end, he stopped drinking and things, and there was a moment of closure that I'm thankful that I got between me and my dad, where we had a conversation and we ironed out a couple of things. And so when he died, it kind of knocked the last wee bit of wind I had left in my sails at me, and I just decided, you know what, I was that riddled with depression and addiction. I thought, I've had enough of this. I'm out of here. I just get the funeral out of the way and I'll go and kill myself. But the day of the funeral came, and my wee brother was at the funeral, and my wee brother brought along a fella called Morris Craig, who's like an outreach worker for Teen Challenge. And when I met Morris, there was something about this guy straight away, for the get-go. I thought, quite intimidating at first. When I say intimidating, he's the most loveliest guy. He's walking in the spirit, this man. You know, you can see the fruits of the spirit in this man, but he was that happy. I thought, this must be fake, you know? And the guy straight away up, man, to know my story. I'm thinking, why is this guy even interested in me? But anyway, after the funeral, I never killed myself, because my wee brother had went to rehab, and when I seen him at the funeral, I thought, there's something in this. There's definitely something in this. So for months, Morris would be chatting my flat door, and he was just that nice a guy. I thought, well, here's this guy, he's going to want to come in and read scripture to me, knowing that, and I can't even bother with it. And because he was that nice, he would let him in, and he would be sitting there, and you're sitting there, burst. And he would sit there, and he'd read scripture to you. But that scripture sank in, it did sink in, because I remember explaining to him, because at the time I was driving a wee forklift for a glass bottle factory, and I remember he was speaking to me about rehab, and I said, but Morris, if I go to rehab, when he told me it was 11 months, and I remember saying, wait a minute, how am I going to live? I'm going to need to give my flat up, I'm going to need to give my job up. And he read that scripture in Matthew about how, look at the birds in the air, you know, and look at the flowers and the clothed. Won't God look after you just as much them? And that stuck with me a wee bit, because he said something to me. He says, you might be giving your flat up and your job up, but you'll be gaining your life back. And I thought, you know what, he's right. And it was one of the penny drop moments. So I very quickly got to the point where I went into rehab, and rehab for me was quite a tough time, because it wasn't just addiction, it was just a manifestation of a lot of other stuff that had rooted in me. Because in Psalm 23, you know, God states, he says this, he prepares a table before you in the presence of your enemies. And it took me some time through the course of a rehab to realise my enemies weren't, I actually think my enemies were people maybe they had run-ins with, you know, gangs or whatever, or physical enemies, but that's, my enemies were all the root issues of my addictions, which were trust was a big thing for me. I developed serious anger issues through my many years of growing up in that madness. And, you know, love, I never actually felt love. You know, that was a big thing for me that night when I stayed at my friend's house, and that was something I had to deal with as a grown man. So a lot of these stuff was... it's hard for me to deal with. I was 33 years of age when I went into rehab, and, you know, when you go to a place where you've got somebody telling you, see, this needs to change, and you can take it a bit personal as a man, until somebody says to me, God forbid you go to a place to change, Tommy, and things actually get pointed out in you that needs to change, you know, and it's like, it seems, it's common sense, this stuff, it's simple, but for a guy from my background and my warped way of thinking, it was like Japanese to me, unfortunately, so it took me the full 11 months to work through a load of stuff. But You know, I met with God before I went into rehab. Morris, outside a quarry in Kilburnie, led me to the Lord, and you know, the best way I can explain it was, it was one of these situations where nothing changed, but absolutely everything changed at the same time. And what I mean by that is, straight after that, I still found myself sitting in a house with all these folk partying and taking drugs and all the rest of it. But what they were talking about on the mince, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, it wasn't sitting right with me anymore. I thought, do you know what? No, I can't be dealing with this. And I'd end up isolating myself. But back to rehab, you know, I completed rehab and I became a volunteer. During my rehab process, you know, my heart was soft and, you know, I felt God put it in my heart to help people in similar circumstances as myself. And I very quickly moved into that role and I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I loved being somebody who could come alongside somebody who took, because I understood folk. See, the guy who was running up and down the corridor shouting and swearing, I was attracted to the guys because I knew why they were doing that and you could work with it. And so I then became a support worker, and then I was a senior advisor for some years in the rehab, which I loved. But then the opportunity came when I met my lovely wife just during the relaxation of the COVID. And, you know, we got married, and then I moved down to Stirling, and I've been working with Connect 2 ever since, and I'm just in a position where I'm blessed. I mean, it's a different opportunity for me. Instead of sitting in the safety of an office dealing with people on a one-to-one basis, I'm out in the streets or out in their homes, meeting them where they're at, and it's a fresh challenge for me, and I love it. And I get the opportunity to speak God into people's life, tell them that you don't have to live like this, and share my story with them. And you can see it in them, like, do you know what? I don't have to live like this. And like David explained, we're now in the schools, which is amazing. It's like a whole kettle of fish, a whole different kettle of fish, dealing with these young fellas who are just young guys that are, you know, full of all sorts, but you can see through that, and it's amazing. So thank you for listening to me, and I'll hand you back over to David.
Wow. I'm sure this morning that there's nobody here that's not been taken on by those stories of changed lives. You know, what I want to say here just now is that it doesn't need to be about addictions. When we meet with the guys and the girls in the streets, we talk about their Achilles heel has been their drugs, their drink. It's not the problem. I don't know what's going on in your life, folks. One of the things we want to do when we're working with folks is to tell them and to show them there's a better way. Life doesn't need to be like this. I don't know what is going on in your life at this moment in time. You're probably not in the chaotic lifestyle that these guys have talked about. But the reality is we're all got an Achilles heel. We've all got a problem. It's called the sin problem. I'm not any better than what Tommy is or was. The reality is, I'm just the same. I'm one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. And I always say that the one thing we as Christians, the church, have got to do is bring in and speak hope into people's lives. People, every one of us, God wants to have a relationship with. I don't know if you know that this morning, but the reality is he has a plan for your life. Mark is from Alloa. Paul, who you met earlier, from Alloa. Nicola, from Alloa. They've all pals. They've all seen something in getting away and getting a life back, and there was a ripple effect. But, you know, I've seen it in people's lives who are not addicts, that their life's been touched by God and the ripple effect goes out to others. One verse I want to just share with you this morning before I finish. And the verse, the next slide there, please. Next one again. Okay, oh, that's out of context there. It's John 5 and 6, that's correct. So it talks there about Jesus meeting a man who was lame, who was broken. He was beside the pool of Bethesda. And he asked him a question. This is the same question I'm going to ask you this morning. It's the same question we asked the guys in addiction. Do you want to be well? There's a thought process there. Before these guys could go to rehab, they've got to want it. It's hard. It ain't going to happen overnight. And as Mark alluded to, we had to literally cajole them, curdle them onto rehab. The fact is, they get to a point of where life is so bad that there's probably not any other options for them. Folks, don't let life get bad. If you're in a bad place, reach out. God is there. God wants you to know life doesn't need to be like this. There is a better way. There's God's way. Do you want to be well this morning? That's the question I'm going to leave you with. And hopefully today you've got a sense of what God is doing. You've heard two miracles. I could have had Nicola come up here. I was kidding her on. She's going to tell her story and sing to us today. Oh, but I was only joking, Nicola. But the reality is we're just one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. And the bread isn't us. It's not the charity. It's not even the church. It's God. And so this morning, can I just encourage you, no matter where you are, no matter how old or young, look to him. For the answer lies in Jesus. Is there a way out of addiction, of depression, of loss of job? Yes. Jesus wants to do life with each one of us this morning. May God bless you all for being here this morning.